You are listening to Radio Maria Canada. We now present the Health Hub, hosted by Kathy Biasi.
Welcome to the Health Hub on Radio Maria Canada, exploring cutting-edge health and wellness information and therapies, helping you to take your health to the next level. I'm your host, Kathy Biasi, and I'm a holistic nutritionist and a professional cancer coach. Our ability to smell comes from our olfactory system, tissues found inside our nose and connected directly to our brain. Different scents and smells can provoke emotions, trigger a memory, and help us to identify our surroundings. Our ability to smell also plays a key role in our health, physiologically impacting mood and stress levels. Aromatherapy uses essential oils to stimulate the olfactory system with the intention of improving the health of the body, mind, and spirit by enhancing both physical and emotional health. To help us better understand how aromatherapy works and its implications in health, we have Amy Anthony joining us on Health Hub today. Amy is listed as one of America's most influential aromatherapists. She is currently the New York State representative for the Alliance of International Aromatherapists and has her private practice called NYC Aromatica, which includes one-on-one customized aromatherapy sessions, online class offerings, corporate consulting, and article writing. And she is the host of Essential Aromatica podcast. Aromatherapy can be a challenging space. There's an abundance of essential oils with varied health implications and situations that they should be used in. The alchemy behind creating essential oil blends is something that really needs to be learned. It can be a complicated thing, and diving down that rabbit hole can take a lot of time. And so we have Amy on the show to kind of open the doors, pull back the blinds to help us get an initial understanding of aromatherapy. We talk about what aromatherapy actually is, what some of the key benefits in using essential oils are, and what the best way is to begin using essential oils. Also, methods of using them, too. That's an important thing that we talk about. Stay tuned with us. We will be back in just a few minutes to talk about aromatherapy, essential oils, with our guest, Amy Anthony.
You are listening to Radio Maria Canada. We now continue with the program, The Health Hub, hosted by Kathy Biasi.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. Today's show has been recorded, so no opportunity for calling in. Please do follow us on our social sites. We are on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and we are at the Health Hub RMC. If you ever need to contact us about anything, if you want further information about our guest today, Amy, or other guests, this is the way to get to us. Amy, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for having me today.
Really interested in this subject, you know, and not just because it's just such a pleasant thing to talk about. You know, people like the smell of things, but I think because I don't know if we dive in enough to how much the olfactory system and plants and essential oils can impact our health. So I'm really looking forward to learning a lot from you today. Tell us how you got started in this area.
Oh, yes, of course. It basically is a story of a love and a need to be in nature. So I grew up in the Hudson Valley of New York State, and I have pictures of myself outside in the garden. My mom had me weeding since I was, I don't know how old. So I have a love for weeding. Anyone that gardens,
you have a love for weeding?
Yeah. It's like, that's what your job is when you take care of plants, is to give them the best environment. So to weed is to love your plants. You're cultivating.
Okay. So, I'm going to get my children to listen. If they only hear this part today. This is what I want them to hear.
Please do. So it was bonding time with my mom, with my dad, with my grandmother and great uncle, to be outside. Wow. So long and short is, I moved around a bit when I was a teenager, and I always needed to be by plants. And that was always a way for me to find connection, was to be in nature. And I'm just pausing because I always bring this up when people ask. I was that weird teenager at 14 years old creating an herb garden and trying to learn Latin names. So it was just a big part. And fast forward, we moved to Western New York and I wasn't happy, and I must get back to the East Coast. And I wanted to go to college in New York City, and I need the culture. I need to be around those ideas. So I went to school here in New York City, and I got the job. You know, I was making my money. I was supporting myself as a strong, independent female, but I was always lacking something. And I knew I was lacking my connection to nature. So the crux of it is, the essential oils found me. And my message to folks is that essential oils are a way to connect with nature when you can't. You know, they're much more impactful than drinking a tea, dare I say that. But they're very immediate and very lovely. So the oils found me around the year of 2008, probably 2010. But in 2012, I took my first workshop at a store here in New York City called Enfleurage. Great place when you come to visit here. They still exist. And I was obsessed. I was like, what are these? How do they work? What's this mystery of distillation? You know, this whole thing. And then I became obsessed with self-study, and then I must become certified. At the time in 2014, I couldn't tell you why, but I found a school opened up right here in New York City, three blocks from my apartment, that offered in-person certification. So I signed up, I earned my two certifications, I audited level three, I was asked to teach. So suddenly I was in the business of aromatherapy.
You know, when I think of essential oils, I work with a naturopathic doctor, and he distills. The whole science of it eludes me, so we'll get into a little bit of that. But just the whole concept of taking a plant, squeezing out the oils, it just, I don't quite get, what is this mystery of distillation? I guess you found out what the mystery is. Can you explain it to us a little bit?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I do distill as well for the aromatic hydrosols. For folks that might not be as steeped in this as I am, it takes hundreds or kilos of plant material to obtain a kilo of essential oil. So the distillation process is really old and lovely, and it worked 500 years ago. It's still the same today. But how I like to describe this is that we're making the invisible visible through distillation. We can't see scent molecules because they're so tiny. They're like, each molecule is like, you know, five carbons, 10 carbons, like 15 carbons. And then it begins to get too big. So we're making the invisible visible. And what we do, just this past weekend, I distilled elderflower to get a hydrosol. And I took 1 pound of plant material. I just took the flowers. I cleaned it. I took 1 pound of the flowers. I put it in a little copper still. And then you have to apply heat, and you apply steam, or in this case, you put water in your pot. You seal up your still. You make sure all the joints are sealed. So I use rye flour. It's old fashioned, and then you apply that heat, and then the steam will start to be created, and this excitation happens in through the plant material, and only the most volatile molecules will be carried over on the steam into the condenser to drip out. To distill is to distillar, to drip is the Latin word. Mm-hmm. And it's important to bring this up because behind in that pot with all the biomass, with all the plant material, you have vitamins and minerals and nutrition and things that aren't making it over. So the distillation process only brings over the most light and volatile molecules, many of which smell and have magical powers.
And what are the magical powers that you've taken out, as you say, sort of the essence of nutrition from the plant? What are you left with when you have that essential oil?
Yeah, so to be, I guess, not boring, but technically we're looking at the class called terpenes. And a lot of people are starting to learn more about terpenes because cannabis is terpene-based. It's an aromatic. So we're looking at molecules that are terpene-based. There are monoterpenes, sesquiterpenes, and there's all these different chemical classes. But what we're really getting are these active agents, we can call them. It's such a cold thing to say. These bioactive things that are really have this affinity for working with fats, cellular membranes. So one thing essential oils as a class are incredibly antibacterial. Several are antimicrobial, some are antifungal. So they work with receptor sites of cells to like disrupt protein membranes, to then let like cells leak out. A lot of these monoterpene chemicals are antioxidant, so they will attach to free radicals. Many of these, we still don't know the modes of application or of how they work, but many of these oils, their components are anti-inflammatory agents and wound healing from a physical standpoint. But there's also this mental standpoint that we could get into. Mm-hmm. But we have one thing that's really important, and more science is being proven, that when we smell these molecules are so small, they can attach to receptor sites and work with our GABA receptors, oxytocin receptors, glutamate receptors. So there's more and more evidence we're getting to show the science behind the mechanisms, but a lot's happening.
So it's not just feeling good because the smell is awesome. You know, I gravitate towards the citrus and that's what makes me feel good. There is medicinal value in these oils.
Yes. And you just touched on something great, because essential oils are exactly that. They're the and, not the or. It smells good, gives me a memory, makes me feel good. And guess what? You know, I could have rosemary being beneficial for respiratory support. You know, it's like there's mind-body connectors. That's what these really do. They're really unique that way.
So I'm going to guess that the quality of the plants that you use will impact the quality of the oils that are produced.
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so.
And so how then, you know, do you grow your own plants?
Yeah, I do have a garden and I do distill in small batches, but I don't have enough to produce essential oils. But I do.
You do produce
garden.
So we're looking for plants. So you have to source these plants. If these plants have been sprayed, is this something that you have to avoid, or is the process of distillation taking care of that?
I love that question, because yes, the distillation process could be killing a lot of things. But energetically, you will have residue, like physical residue, but also energetically, you will get that in that oil. And honestly, I don't care if that sounds woo-woo, but I have smelled oils from artisanal distillers that I know they hand harvest things, or I know it's from a lovingly cared for plot of land. I have had things where I cry on a very deep level. And not like I'm sad, but it really touches you that deeply. And when you smell a lovingly cared for plant, something with good intention, you smell it. It smells like a poem. It moves you without you having to do anything. And if you smell something that is just like, you know, adulterated or not grown in a loving way, it might smell a bit one-dimensional. I often say they smell metallic. They smell flat. You can smell it. That honestly, it comes through. And that touches your emotions. It's so connected that way.
Is it, I guess, does each oil will have its own, the oil that comes through has a color to it? Like, can you tell by the color of an oil? Well,
and yes and no. By definition, going back to that terpene class, like when we distill, we're only getting the most volatile things. So color stays behind.
Okay.
Citruses are cold pressed, actually, or expressed. So you'll get color. But most oils should be clearish. And some have a color, like I'm looking at a vetiver here to ground me. It's distilled in copper, so it turns green during the process. But most oils should be clear and very mobile, very, you know, thin.
Mm-hmm. And do they have an expiry date?
Yeah, yes and no. Treat them like a fine wine. So it depends on the oil. But most of the oils we know and love, like rosemary, eucalyptus, the citruses, don't expose them to oxygen, because remember, essential oils are very antioxidant. They want to take that oxygen, that free radical. So treat them like fine wine or your fine perfume. Keep them in the dark. Generally, your citruses will last 1 to 2 years. Your a lavender, if lovingly cared for, is, you know, 3 to 5 years. But light and oxygen and heat are their worst enemies. So really, it's like if you have a bottle of lemon that's, you know, 8 years old, use it to clean your toilet with or something like that. Don't use it therapeutically.
It's a real understanding to the power of what these oils can do. Just when you said use them to clean the toilet, I'm like, oh, I never even thought of that. I have essential oils myself. I love them. I don't use them enough, probably because I don't know as much about them as I should. And that's exactly what we're doing here. Mm. Now, so the olfactory is our smelling system, basically. Mm. And olfactory aromatherapy is this whole idea of, you know, ingesting through smell. There are many vehicles that can lead to the olfactory. How do we smell the oils? Put it that way, very simply. How do we smell? Do we put them on something? Do we use a carrier oil? What is the best way to smell these oils?
This is a great question because it's all of the above. When we start to think of topical application, these essential oils are so concentrated. You know, we're taking, again, kilos of plant material to get just a small amount of oil. So we have to think we must dilute them, because otherwise on our skin can start to react saying, I can't deal with this anymore. And you might become sensitized where you can't use that oil anymore, even diluted. So in my learning and studying and practice, I really gravitated towards olfaction, like you said, and through smell. And I am the biggest fan of smelling from the bottle, from a cotton pad, because when you take the oil out of the bottle, the different chemical components in an individual oil evaporate differently, because some are heavier than others. So when you put it on a cotton pad, or I have something I want to share I just started doing. If you take a drop and put it on like a cord or a thread and wear it around your wrist, that's a way to have it near you and you can smell it. You could buy aromatherapy jewelry. But I'm a huge fan of smelling directly. Or two other applications I think a lot of people know are the aromatic mists, like a spray bottle, where you can make a sleep spray. You could spray your face. So I love spraying your hair because that will hold the oils. And what we're talking about I have a 60 ml bottle in my hand or 2 ounce. You're putting like 25 to 30 drops total of essential oil in there for general aromatherapy application. And you just shake and spray your face, your hair, like 2 or 3 times, maybe 2 or 3 times a day, and work with the oils that way.
What are you putting the oils into? Water or another oil?
Good question. I like to put them in the spray in distilled water, because we don't want the bacteria from tap water, or the hydrosol, because the hydrosols also have therapeutic applications. And when I say hydrosol, you know, that's the aqueous part we get from the distillation process. And many people know rose water. So when I say rose water, often that, because rose is so expensive as an oil, because it doesn't want to give itself to the oil part, it wants to, the chemical components want to go into the water. So that's why you can get inexpensive rose water, but the essential oil is so expensive.
Mm. And what about diffusing?
Yes. So I don't personally diffuse a lot because I'm around these oils every day. Okay. So I get the therapeutic benefits from them. Like I'm preparing for an event tonight at a wellness event. So I'm always by these friends. But I almost said distillation. diffusing is really beneficial. And I'm going to say this, I think this word is overused, but it's important. It's important that aromatherapy is done with intention. So if you find you're feeling like sluggish and you want to pick me up, go ahead and put, 3 to 5 drops of rosemary oil in your ultrasonic diffuser. Those are the ones that you put like distilled water in or the hydrosol and you put a couple drops and be by that diffuser and mindfully breathe by it. And these should be on timers. We don't want to breathe these molecules in day in, day out. This is a soapbox. Please diffuse before bed, not during bedtime. Oh. There's clinical evidence that shows that shorter applications of oils are more beneficial. So if you were to smell lavender as you're getting ready for bed or diffusing 30 minutes before you get into bed, it is much more beneficial because too much of a good thing, you can start to have the opposite effect. You start to deaden your olfactory nerves, even though you still are breathing this stuff in. But as I just said, please, I hope everyone really takes this to heart. Shorter, smaller applications have greater effect.
I don't know why it's never dawned on me just to open the bottle and sniff it. I always assumed that I had to put drops in. No, if I put some on my body, sometimes I mix oils, essential oils, mm-hmm. with creams. Is that?
Yes.
That's okay to do?
Oh, yes. Yes. Just like you said, it's topical application. You are diluting them. Please do dilute them. So just as a shortcut for folks, I do have something on my website on dilution rates. Also, there are organizations. I'm a member of the Alliance of International Aromatherapists. I'm a member of NAHA up in Canada. There's the CFA as well. Go look for dilution rate guidelines. So for every 30 mils or 60 mils, you'll have guideline ratios for 15 drops to 1 ounce. Like I said mm-hmm. before, about 30 drops to 2 ounces. So with that in mind, we love to apply them on our skin, right? It's very beneficial that way. It's just about that intention. So there's many gateways to aromatherapy mm-hmm. and it's about finding what fits for you, for the individual.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to make my intentions more pointed because I gravitate towards the more citrusy for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I'll just take an oil and I'll just dump a few drops in there and rub it on. So I have no idea about dilution rate. So I guess that's something I'm going to have to take a look at. Amy, mm-hmm. let's take a quick break and come back. I want to talk about when we get back, I want to talk about your applications and helping your clients through certain health issues. So everybody, we'll be back in just a few minutes.
You are listening to The Health Hub here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. To contact us and be a part of the show, email thh@radiomaria.ca. We now continue with the program. Here once again is your host, Kathy Biasi.
Welcome back to our program, everybody. We are talking with Amy Anthony. Amy, we're going to continue this fascinating conversation about aromatherapy, essential oils. Do you have a particular one you like the best?
It's like, what's the flavor of the day? So all of them. I, as a practitioner and teacher, I've tried to understand the personality of each oil to the best I can.
So there are, I don't know, millions of essential oils. And so, for instance, when I'm doing supplements, if someone said to me, I want the top 3 supplements to stick in my shelf, this is, I'm just getting started off. Would you have 3 or 5 that you would say, start with these, get a feel for them, and then branch out from there, or no?
Yeah. Yes. And definitely, because you have to start someplace, like as you're saying. So a lot of these people know, and it, of course, it depends on your intention, but I look at oils, and you'll remember this, as uppers, kind of modulators, and downers.
Okay.
So the uppers are kind of your classic rosemary, peppermint. There's a couple more feisty ones out there, but those are two classic uppers you can go to. Always the citruses kind of fall into that too. Your lemon, your grapefruit for that uplifting and brightness, mental clarity. You could put frankincense in there, but let me rein it in, Amy. Rosemary and eucalyptus are some greatest hits. The modulators, and so many essential oils are modulators, but two that come to mind, I have a love affair. I'm getting to know Juniperus virginiana more and more. That's a North American native plant to the East Coast, especially up into Canada. Definitely. So that's Eastern red cedar. Very modulating, calming, centering, but not making you too up, not making you too down. Another one that's kind of a classic is lavandin. Many people don't know true lavender. That sounds snobby of me to say, but what is on the market is a lot of lavandin, which is a naturally occurring hybrid of Lavandula angustifolia, called English lavender, and spike lavender. But it's a very lovely, modulating, even Steven oil.
Okay.
And another even Steven oil, I can't rein it into three, I'm sorry, is geranium.
Okay.
Rose geranium, Pelargonium graveolens, or Pelargonium aspirum are two you can look for. People know the plant when they see it. You know, the red geraniums, like it's related to that. They're from South Africa. It's often grown in Egypt. Very balancing to emotions, to the mood, skin, because a lot of aromatherapy is applicable for skin care in low dilutions. Balancing for skin, balancing for the mind. When you think of these, quote, downers, or the more sedative ones to the nervous system, classic lavender. So Lavandula angustifolia is definitely a go-to. Some people say they hate lavender. I say, please give it a chance. Many people are used to smelling, you know, the industrial lavender or the lavandin. So true high altitude Lavandula angustifolia from France is so different from what you'll just smell like if you go to a drugstore and buy lavender. Mm-hmm. And another one that I don't think is surprising to people is Roman chamomile. Not German chamomile. That's what we're used to drinking. And Roman chamomile is also even Steven. I just distilled the flowers a few weeks ago from my garden. And the mood is just so even with German chamomile. But Roman, the old Latin name is Anthemis. The old Latin name is Anthemis nobilis. It's a like kind of a perennial, grows low to the ground. It smells a bit apple-y. And that is a classic go-to-bed.
Okay, I'm writing these all down.
it's like if the one of your caretakers you really love, you're agitated, and they come in and put a big cotton blanket over you, and you just like can let it all go and go to sleep. That is Roman chamomile's personality.
Okay, there's so many. How do you get? I bought one. I have no idea what the name of it was. I think it was some like a pine tar. I bought one because I thought, oh, that'll smell like the woods. And I diffused like three drops. It was very thick and it smelled like a campfire. Like it stayed in the house for I don't know how, like a burnt campfire. And I thought, do you have to be an expert in these things to buy them? Or how, you know, you work with people. How do you get to the bottom of like these millions of different aromatherapy vehicles?
Yeah, so it is great to work with a professional aromatherapist. And I think to this day, we're still in the educational phase where many people don't know there are professional aromatherapists.
No.
Out there. So we do have organizations such as the ones I mentioned before. But I have to say there's some folks out there that have done a really good job of, you know, I'm independent and I do not advocate for brands. Okay, I'm very firm about that. But there's some brands out there that are good about trying to source good oils and give education on their websites about, hey, here's some ideas, here's safety tips, here's some, you know, stuff like blog ideas. I'm just going to give a shout out. I met this individual once and my teacher met him several times. There's a man, he owns a company called Ziyot Aroma based near Montreal.
And this is Ziyot.
Ziyot, Z-A-Y-A-T.
Okay.
And pretty, you know, it's a website you could go to, pretty straightforward. It's aromatherapists are on staff. I'm bringing this up because there are people, you just have to start nosing around.
Mm-hmm.
So please don't go to Etsy. Please don't buy off of Amazon. Get a feel for the website. If it's too good to be true, it is. Essential oils shouldn't be super expensive, nor should they be dirt cheap.
Okay.
So, you know, a bottle of rose, a 1 mil bottle of rose should cost you like $100.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get rose essential oil for $20. You know, most oils that were used to like Scots pine or hemlock spruce or any of the conifers, if you buy a 10 or 15 mil bottle, you know, I'm kind of just extrapolating here. I'm trying to think of the prices. I don't know them offhand, but US dollars, it's like, you know, $20 or $15.
I guess as the plant goes, if you know what the expensive plants are, you should have some, assume that the oil would be more expensive, like neroli,
exactly.
Which I love.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're
that's
spot on.
Oh, I love that one. That's one that I put in a lot of different, creams and things like that. I absolutely mm-hmm. love that one. I definitely want to get into some of the work you've done with clients, but I think the question that's popping up in my mind that I want to ask for sure, what if people have allergies? What if people have, seasonal allergies or allergic to, I know my mom's allergic to mm-hmm. hemlock. Is that transferred over in the distillation process or is it some other component of the plant that people are allergic to?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there is the rare thing. There's so many allergies. So generally speaking, the oil will not take over those allergens. However, it is always good to do spot testing with someone and introduce an oil. You ask with a client, you always ask about allergies. You ask about any medications they're on. You have to understand the person's life. So again, generally speaking, no. But there is the chance there's a signature of the allergen left or some kind of trigger where you can do smell testing and spot testing on the skin in a diluted form. But generally speaking, no.
Okay, that's good to know. Because, you know, my logical mind goes to we're concentrating the essence of plants mm-hmm. here in the oil. So if you have an allergy to something, it could be magnified. So it's good to know that is not necessarily the truth.
You know what? You touched on something that is interesting. Homeopathically, my experience is that there's not a homeopathic sense to essential oils. There is a homeopathic sense to the hydrosols because the essential oil components can be in the hydrosol in very dilute amounts.
Okay.
But essential oils are very concentrative, aggressive in that way. They're very potent and they kind of just do what they do.
Okay.
But again, there's people that specialize in, I don't know about this stuff, kinesiology and like energy testing with oils and frequencies mm-hmm. that you could start to go down that path. But I did answer the question.
You did. Now you're an expert in working with clients, and it's not just to introduce them to aromatherapy. You're working with clients that have conditions that they're looking to alleviate or to remedy. What are your big success stories, and where is your sort of concentration of interest when you're working with health issues and aromatherapy oils?
Oh, that's a big question because mm-hmm. I just have to be share a realization I had about my practice. And I love about having your own practice because you make your own rules. I studied quote clinical aromatherapy, like I could work with burns and bruising and physical conditions, but we're certified here in the US. And I need to know more about the Canadian way of practice, but it's similar. we can't diagnose or treat. So I have to be really careful about my language.
Oh, yeah.
How I, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I've made the conscious decision in my practice to only focus on emotional benefits or things where I could use soft language, like, and I will share a recent success story. If you know me well enough, I'll work with you physically, but I always come in through mood, emotions. I'm not sleeping well, like
okay.
The soft, soft touch. But a recent really cool success story, well, I have two I'm really thinking of. I had a client come to work with hot flushes. And it's mind-body holism. So we had a session and I made her two products and I gave her a complimentary hydrosol. And her hot flush symptoms basically disappeared after incorporating these products into her life. And I made her a face oil. And I have to look back. I think I made her an aromatic spritzer. But we came in talking about hot flushes and sleep and skincare. So I was like, we can look at all this in one package. That's why she had two products. But I want to pause because I just was throwing a lot of information at you.
No, no, keep going. that's great. And in my mind's eye, I'm thinking, does it matter what the genesis of the hot flashes are? Is that an issue or we just deal with the symptoms? And is that the beauty of aromatherapy?
That exactly. So we can go into that soft touch of we want to help you sleep and promote that. But as we know through like studying herbalism, we borrow a lot of language from herbalism. We get to know where certain plants and their oils thrive, where they have affinities. So for your listeners, some of the greatest hits for feminine support through the ages, but especially through menopause, I found is Vitex berry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Clary sage.
Mm-hmm.
Rose is kind of a classic tonic or toner for the generally toning. Some that you have to be careful of that are very estrogen, pro-estrogen is tarragon and fennel. Some aromatherapists won't even touch tarragon.
Okay.
I just had a client the other week. She's a friend who I see. You could consider her a client. She's been pregnant four times, has been breastfeeding, hasn't menstruated in 7 years. And she had tarragon with her one full day. I gave her like a drop on a tissue and she was smelling it all day. And she wrote to me on that Monday following that Saturday. She's like, Amy, I got my period.
Hmm.
Right? That's crazy, but it's true. Tarragon is very powerful. But again, some aromatherapists won't touch it. Because it's known to be like work with estrogen.
Okay.
Like I have to watch my medical use of.
Right. Yeah. Some people you don't want estrogen promoters for sure.
Yeah.
So if you're working with someone that's had breast cancer or something like that, you need to be careful in that. So these things need to be understood. There's a very, two lines under that. You can't just willy-nilly into these things because they do offer therapeutic benefits that you may not want.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's a very interesting point to bring up.
Yeah. The very thing that I think is important, like with any plant medicine, is that if you notice something's happening, just stop taking it. And one thing that's important when I work with clients, and this is sitting on my training here, you have to set a protocol for somebody. So if you see them, you make them their products, you give them instructions, you stay in touch. Someone might be working with something for a month and then they stop and you assess what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, so we always want to help move somebody along through the transition. And one thing I've really seen is aromatherapy helps with transitions in life through working through grief, working through menopause, working through moving. You know, it's aromatherapy really supports emotionally the transitions in life. So aromatherapy, some people might disagree with me, but it's not a lifestyle, right? You go when you say, what am I looking to address? You formulate something for that. You give specific usage instructions, and then you say, let's reassess. And something I really want to share, you know, I'm not getting rich off this. I want to see a client. I'd love to see them twice a year, you know, because things change. And I love when I get a repeat client and I see them like twice a year. I love that. I don't want to see them every month, you know?
Yeah.
But
No, do you mix? Okay, I have so many questions just popped in my mind. Can you mix essential oils? And is there so when you're putting together a, you know, air quotes remedy for one of your clients, is it to be used for only 3 months? Is there harm to using it longer? Can you just use something because you like the smell, or is that just so not what you should be doing? And avoid something because you don't like the smell, like my pine tar.
Yeah, well, so avoid things you don't like. One thing about the liking and disliking, with aromatherapy, we know that scent is very connected to smell and to, excuse me, scent is connected to memory. So if you, someone tells you that peppermint is so great for headaches, and it excels for headaches and pains and aches, if you hate peppermint and have this bad memory of whatever, don't work with peppermint oil. Why do you want to do that to yourself? So always, there's always a different essential oil personality to turn to.
Okay.
Sorry, you asked me a couple questions and I latched onto the last one.
Oh, no, that's okay. I can't even remember what I asked you because that was kind of the important one. You know what? I can't remember, but go ahead.
One of them was blending oils, wasn't
right.
it?
Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Is there a science behind it, or I love lemon, I'm going to do that with lavender. Okay. Or are we going to have an explosion?
I love that. So there's an art and science behind blending. So when you're training, you look at therapeutic benefits and applications, you look at safety data, and all that always supports the intuitive part of blending that you just get to slowly try to master as you practice.
Okay.
But you always start with the foundation of, like before, I shared some uppers and modulators and downers. Right. So if you want the psychosomatic, the neuroendocrine help of sleep, you might not want to blend rosemary and lavender. However, when you blend rosemary and lavender together to work with arthritis or as some kind of pain, that's a very beautiful blend that you could work with during the day. So there's just an understanding of blending that is, it just takes a little time. But blending, a lot of us speak this way, is you work synergistically with oils. And there is a lot of clinical evidence that, you know, lavender can be very beneficial to soothe the nervous system and help you go to sleep. If you blend that lavender with Roman chamomile, there's a synergistic effect that happens where there are more than the sum of the parts. So there's this aspect of blending that's interesting. But no, you won't get any explosions, right? sometimes you might smell something and be like, eh, you know. And that's the thing about working with an aromatherapist. We blend therapeutically, but we also keep perfume in mind. We think, does this smell nice together? Mm-hmm. Is this pleasing? When you're with me as a client, I might give you a bunch of oils to smell to see if you reject them. And if we have a blend and you have like three oils in front of you and you're like, but Amy, I just love grapefruit. And I might be like, hey, yeah, let's put that in. That let's just, you know, add a splash of that in to make you love this and want to have this in your life.
There are oils that don't smell. Okay, I'm going out on a limb with this one. Like, I know the potential value of frankincense, the health benefits. I don't particularly think it's in my, wow, that smells awesome. So like there are certain oils that you just kind of run with because of their therapeutic values. You can't love them all. And you don't want to not use them if they're therapeutically good.
Definitely. So a couple ways to respond to that is, first, if you're... look at country of origin, because there's different frankincense species and then different places that frankincense likes to grow. So there's like Indian frankincense, which is a totally different animal than, let's say, Omani frankincense. So geographical location is important to look at. And like I said, if you smell an oil and it just smells really bad, that might just be a crappy oil.
I remember I got when I thought was a rose type of oil. I can't remember. It wasn't a pure rose oil. And I smelled it and I thought, that doesn't smell like a rose at all. In fact, that's like not nice at all. And apparently it was the way that this oil does actually smell. It really is a learning process. And there are just so many out there. If people wanted to get in touch with you, if people wanted to take a deeper dive into aromatherapy, do you see people virtually? Can people from Canada reach out to you?
Yes, definitely. So just to share, recently this year, I started to offer one-on-one educational sessions by the hour. So that's tailored to the person that's looking to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
In my private practice, in my heart of hearts, you see me in person. I have a whole experience I share in my practice. I am open to virtual sessions, but please, in my heart of hearts, there's nothing like being together and smelling those oils together to see the response of the client.
So, and you're in Manhattan, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm by Union Square.
Okay.
So I love seeing people remotely, but it's just not as rich of an experience.
Mm-hmm.
So in my heart of hearts, yeah.
Okay. And where can people reach out to you? Website, social media, all that fun stuff.
Our calling cards. And
our calling cards, yes.
Yeah. So you could find me on my website at nycaromatica.com. I have classes. Several of them are free and pay what you wish on like intro to oils. I have a up there, and I think on my front page still, how to smell an oil. Haha, but it's true. Diffusing oils. I have a class. I used to be a teacher at the New York Institute of Aromatherapy and the New York Institute of Aromatic Studies. Those folded. So I created a lot of class content to share with people. So that's slowly getting put up on my website. I'm sharing that because I was a teacher. I still am. Mm-hmm. But I have DIY how to, you know, make creams, how to make an aromatic spritzer and incorporate essential oils into an aromatic spritzer or a cream or a salve. I have lots of stuff on my website. I have videos, articles. Just get in there. If you want education, it's there.
Perfect. And jump down that rabbit hole, right?
Big time. And also, I have a podcast. It's very niche. It's called Essential Aromatica. And it's very aromatherapy centric, but as a way to connect with the oils in the more emotional way, I have a monthly series I'm doing now on each new moon. It's called Luna Aroma.
Oh.
And I give guided aromatic encounters. I love doing those in person, but I create a whole meditation and I look at seasonal themes around me in my area, and I share them with an essential oil I pair with the current moon time. So I really encourage people to check that out as a way to connect with essential oils. In a less, it's my passion to pursue the getting beyond the this is good for that mentality mm-hmm. with essential oils.
Yeah, I think that's where we start. I think it's there with aromatherapy, because I've only dabbled at it's like an onion. There's so many layers and layers, and you got to go slowly or else it's overwhelming. But all that information, everybody, will be put up with the show notes. So you will definitely have that. Amy, thank you so much for joining us. It's a really great conversation, and it sparked my interest. I'm going to go back up to my wheel and see what I have there. But thank you so much. I really do appreciate you joining us today.
Kathy, thanks. It's been a real pleasure spending time with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And everybody, we'll talk to you next week on The Health Hub.
Have been listening to The Health Hub, hosted by Kathy Biasi, here on Radio Maria Canada.